Welcome to Off the Grid Radio. Better ideas to bust you and your family out of today's global control grid. Now, here's today's show.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of Off the Grid Radio. I'm Michael Faust of OffTheGridNews.com. When we talk about living off the grid, we often picture a two-story house with a garden and livestock. Situated on green rolling hills. But for one off-grid couple that we'll talk to today, there are no rolling hills or garden, and there's not even a traditional house. That's because they chose to escape the rat race by living off-grid, not on land, but at sea. They sell their possessions, normal life on the water with their dog. And believe it or not, their monthly expenses are far, far less than they were on land. Their names are Ryan and Olivia Frank, and they are our guests on this week's edition of Off the Grid Radio. But first, let me tell you about today's sponsor. It's MySolarBackup.com. Discover how you can get instant backup power even when your neighbor's electricity has a secret power plant hidden in your home. Best of all, the electricity you get, it's free. MySolarBackup.com. Ryan and Olivia, thanks so much for joining us, and welcome to the program.
Happy to be here.
Hi, guys.
I want to say up front that you guys have an amazing blog that people will want to visit after hearing your story. It's csailing.com. That's S-E-A-C-S-sailing.com. Great pictures and great posts there that people want to check out. You guys have been married for 8 years. Tell us how you got to the point where you wanted to sell, you know, your possessions and buy a boat and live on a boat. How did that happen?
Well, we started out, we met each other, you know, in Colorado, what's called Denver Tech Center, where we both had regular jobs, 9-to-5ers, and we met online, actually, and went on a couple of dates, and we really hit it off really well, and we decided to eventually, you know, move in together. We moved very quickly.
Yeah.
We got an apartment. We moved in together probably after a month after meeting each other, maybe even less. It was just the right time for us, and we really hit it off really well. And we're both adventurous types. We living in Colorado, you know, we like the outdoors and we also both like the water, interestingly enough. You know, the only kind of bodies of water that Colorado have are lakes. So we spent some time on the lakes. Olivia, before we met, she was an avid windsurfer. And I personally had kind of just started my interest in sailing as well, sailing boats. I was handed down a small little sailboat that from my mother, and she had never used, and it was kind of broken apart, and I figured out how to put it together and just took it on the water and went for it, and really, really enjoyed that. When we came together and met, you know, I had gone through a couple of smaller boats, and then I had recently purchased a 26-foot sailboat. And one of our first dates, I took Olivia on the 26-foot McGregor sailboat and took her out to one of the lakes there in Denver. It's called Chatfield. And we went sailing, one evening, and wind picked up a little bit. We were heeling over really hard, and looking at Olivia, and she wasn't scared at all, and she was really enjoying it. So I said, hey, this is a keeper. She really enjoyed the fact that, we could sail together, because, you know, she was used to windsurfing, and that's kind of a solo kind of thing. So, we really hit it off. We really liked each other, and I was working that 9-to-5, and, you know, it was really kind of draining me, and Olivia kind of wanted a change in her life as well, so she said, hey, why don't you start a business? And, you know, she really encouraged me to kind of do that, so I quit my job and I started this business. And while I was kind of building the business, Olivia was working to support us both. And eventually the business took off, she was able to also quit her job, and we continued kind of building that business together. We always had, the love for sailing. And so eventually we would go and charter a sailboat once or twice. We actually did this out in Florida, And we would charter it like from, you know, one of the Fort Lauderdale, and we would, you know, sail along the coast a little bit and for 7 days, and then come back in the boat and drop it off and go back to Colorado and get back to work. Mm-hmm. And while we were out there, we always told ourselves, man, it would really be great if we could just keep going and not have to come back. And so that kind of spawned our dream of doing that. So kind of our end goal for everything in our lives at that point was, you know, let's work to the point where we can afford a boat and let's, you know, sell everything we own and buy a boat that we like and then just go off and sail.
So your goal then at that point was to get enough money where you could just move somewhere. I guess you were thinking Florida and to buy a boat and just to live on a boat then.
Yeah, that was our goal and that was our dream. And we
knew at that point technology was the solution for us that was going to enable us to achieve that dream.
Because both of you guys have jobs that are I guess we could say laptop based, where you can do a lot of things just on a boat.
Sure.
Sure.
Technology wise, I mean, Olivia builds websites and I do IT consulting, you know, and really, you know, the technology was really a way for us to do that. But, you know, if we could, we wouldn't have wanted to work at all. We wanted to just go and take some time off and really sail and see the world and travel and kind of live minimally, you know, without all the pressures and stresses of day-to-day life, you know, mortgages and you know, electricity bills and, you know, all the other bills and other stresses that come along with typical, you know, land life, we call it.
I think your first, I'm kind of going to try to jump ahead here in the story just to kind of fast forward us a bit. Your first year living on the boat, was it 2012? Is that right?
Correct.
That is right.
Okay,
yeah.
How was that first year? Was it everything you pictured it would be? I guess first thing I should ask is, what did you buy? What kind of boat did you buy?
Well, we bought a Beneteau 40-foot sailboat, and we felt that was perfect for us. It had, you know, more than enough space. We felt, you know, we were used to a very large 3,000 square foot home, and you know, but you know, we spent many weekends on the small sailboat that we had, you know, and we don't need a lot, you know, so we figured, you know, 40 foot would be plenty of space with some to spare. We wanted some extra space for, you know, guests whenever they arrived, but it was a 40 foot boat. We bought the boat sight unseen. We put a deposit on it and sold everything we owned, packed everything up in a Jeep Wrangler and a trailer, and including our dog, and drove across country to come and see it. We kind of already had purchased it. We put a down payment on it, but it was pending the survey. So the survey worked out, and luckily, otherwise, we were homeless at that point. So we jumped on the boat, and, you know, our first steps were to, you know, really make it livable, really try to make it self-sustaining so that we wouldn't require a lot of you know, fuel resources, and so we made sure we had a good solar panel on board, a good battery bank on board so we could charge with the solar panel, and we had a generator to occasionally charge when needed our batteries, and so, you know, we wanted to make sure that was in good working order. So our first steps were to really make it livable, but then also to really understand kind of all the aspects of you know, the tools we would need and spare parts that we would need, because our plan was to really get out and sail, you know, outside of normal civilization where a lot of those things are not readily available.
And so that was our, go ahead. I'm sorry, Ryan.
That was our first goal. And so we kind of just winged it, and we figured out what we needed. And eventually we sold our Jeep Wrangler that we had. And at that point, we were kind of committed. You know, we had no transportation, no vehicle for land, and we were ready to just sail off and go.
And it was really quite a liberating feeling, knowing this was all we have, and, you know, going off the grid and really being out there, living off of nature, was something so eye-opening to us. And we loved every minute. I mean, we learned every step of the way, every nautical mile, we learned something different. You know, we've seen ocean life, you know, that we've never seen before, and it was a really amazing experience.
We're talking to Ryan and Olivia Frank. We encourage people to visit their website. That's csailing.com. That's csailing.com. I'm assuming that when you're out there on the water that you fish a lot, you eat a lot of fish. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, in our first few years, that's primarily our primary food source, not only for ourselves, but for our dog as well. You know, if you're stopping in different islands and different third world countries, you know, you can't just go to a Walmart and get all the things you need. You get what's available, you know.
Right.
Most of the time it's just chicken or, you know, something like that. Or, you know, you can't find fresh vegetables. Whatever you find, you know, at a market or somebody on the street selling something is what you pick. And you make do with what you get.
Right. And, you know, there's only so much room we have on board. So we're you know, pretty limited on how much we can carry also.
So we fish constantly. Whenever we're under sail and we're moving, we have a line out and a lure out. And we're hoping for... you know, mahi-mahi or tuna or something great.
Spanish mackerel.
Yeah, so you guys are living close to the bare minimum. And so I'm assuming you have a stove or something to cook it on board. And so you have a choice of grilling or frying. I'm just kind of asking basic dumb questions, but is that the case?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We've got a grill and we've got a stove. And an oven, you know, just like a normal house would usually, except they're much smaller.
And drinking water. What about drinking water?
So drinking water, we use as needed. We hold about 150 gallons of water. And whenever we're, you know, running out or getting close to running out, or if we're refueling, that needs to happen every now and then as well, then we'll fill up water as well. But there's times where, you know, we're out there for long periods of time and, you know, there may not be a place where we can easily refill. And so we're always on the lookout for rainwater. And we have a rainwater collection system, that's built into our deck and our scuppers. So when it rains, you know, we can flip a valve and it'll drain into our holding tank. So, you know, we use it minimally. We wash dishes with seawater and then rinse them with fresh water. You know, we'll shower in the seawater. We'll basically soak down and then jump in the water and, you know, scrub down, come back out, and then maybe do a fresh water rinse afterwards.
And if it's a good amount of rain, you know, that's a good time for a nice shower.
I bet so. What about us? Power on board? Do you? I know at one point you had solar. Do you still use solar on board there?
Solar is our primary means of energy, definitely.
Okay.
But again, we have a generator that we turn on. Maybe sometimes the solar isn't, you know, if it's not a sunny day or whatnot, we'll turn the generator on for about an hour just to charge the batteries up.
Tell us some places you've been. I know we're talking kind of basics that some people are interested in. I know I am, in terms of how to live on a boat, in terms of eating and drinking water and things like that. But I mean, my goodness, you get on a boat not to live on a boat, but to sail places. Tell us some of the more exciting places that you've been on that boat.
Well, you know, one of the first places we approached was the Bahamas. You know, the Bahamas is the quintessential, you know, island life. You know, you go to the Bahamas and you look at the water and it's pristine, perfectly clear with white sand bottom. I mean, it's just the type of thing that you see in the pictures. So it's really beautiful to us. But what we missed in the Bahamas were, you know, rainforests and jungles and nice, you know, vegetation. You know,
right.
It's all, you know, very flat and sandy areas, and that's about it. But,
I mean, one of my favorite, islands was further down in the Caribbean, and that's where you get to the real elevation and the jungly kind of atmosphere. And one of my favorite islands was Guadeloupe. We really liked the French islands, not only for the fresh baguettes, but they also had great terrain to hike in and fresh water and rainforest, which we loved.
And the French islands are very easy to clear into. You know, when you're traveling, you know, around the country, different countries, you have to worry about, you know, how do we clear in, where are the customs officials, what are the costs, and additionally, do they allow dogs?
Right.
That was a big point for us. And the French islands are very relaxed and very laid back on those aspects.
What about communication? You guys are on a boat. Do you have internet I know you have internet, but how do you have internet, and how do you communicate with folks back on the mainland?
Well, when we were traveling, we got rid of our cell phones. We had no cell phones, but we kept on board a satellite phone, and we keep that satellite phone mostly for emergency purposes. But, you know, occasionally we would use it to communicate with family and keep in touch. We also used it to download weather charts, because when you're on a sailboat, you have to really be very mindful of the weather and make sure that you're not sailing into storms and you're avoiding storms and things like that. So we use a satellite phone to download our weather charts as well. And that's when we're kind of away and sailing, or maybe in places that are uninhabited. But when we're, you know, approaching larger islands, a lot of the islands these days will have, you know, Wi-Fi that's kind of beamed out to the different anchorages and the different bays around the island. And you'll pay, you know, $10 a day, or, you know, $30 a week, or, you know, various different pricing for that. Or we go in and we sit at a coffee shop or you know, some little internet cafe, and we'll use the internet there.
Ryan and Olivia, we need to take a quick break. When we come back, though, let's look at the expenses. How much does this cost? I think a lot of people would think this costs a lot per month. It actually doesn't. We'll talk about that, and we'll talk about some other aspects of living off-grid on the water. We'll be right back.
Have you ever wanted to generate your own supply of electrical power? If so, this is going to be the most important message you will ever hear. Solar power generators are now available from Solutions from Science in Thompson, Illinois. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving electrical power when you need it most. Unlike gas generators, a solar generator runs quietly, emits no fumes, and produces electricity for free. It's like having an electric power plant running quietly in your own home. Run sump pumps, shortwave radios, computers, and even keep food from spoiling. Whether it's hurricanes, ice storms, brownouts, or blackouts, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. When the power goes out, you'll be ready. With a solar power generator from Solutions from Science, go to mysolarbackup.com and get off the grid today. That's mysolarbackup.com, or call 877-327-0365. 877-327-0365. Don't wait. Call today.
Hi, this is Michael Faust of Off the Grid Radio and OffTheGridNews.com. Are you listening to us on iTunes and like what you hear? Then help us and your fellow off-gridders out by rating us. That will help boost our rankings in iTunes so that other off-gridders, homesteaders, and anyone else in the self-sufficient community can discover us. It takes less than 30 seconds. As always, thanks for listening to Off the Grid Radio.
Off the Grid News, because you want a different paradigm.
Ryan and Olivia, before the break, I was referencing how much this costs to live on the water. One thing I want to guide people to, we don't have to talk about specific details to the penny, but Olivia has a great chart on the website cssailing.com, where she compares how much it costs to live on land in Colorado monthly with how much it costs to live on the sea, either tied to a dock or, of course, you know, at anchor or out in the sea or whatever category you want to look at. But one thing that blew my mind, though, guys, is that living the way you guys are living now is cheaper than it was living back in Colorado. Is that right?
Oh, yeah, totally. You know, before on land, you know, we were spending roughly, you know, back in 2012, about, you know, $4,000 a month. And that's, you know, including a house we rented and insurance and, you know, all of the land associated costs. So now, I mean, our expenses have dramatically dropped by living on a sailboat.
Yeah, we're talking like as little as $800 a month, or depending on how you look at it, $1,100 a month. You can check that out on her website. Let's talk about storms, because that's one thing that I was thinking about when we talk about living on a boat at sea. I'm sure you guys have had some storms. Give me a good storm story that I can tell my friends.
we've probably some of the most roughest seas. We try to avoid storms at all costs.
Sure.
And if you're a prudent sailor, then you're going to do that very well. So you know, typically we would avoid storms, but we've been in some very rough seas, and probably the roughest seas that we've been in really are in the Atlantic, off the coast of Turks and Caicos, or there's a lot of banks there, and really the whole Atlantic builds up there, so you can get some really large seas there. Really on the north coast of Puerto Rico, Dominican Republic, and Turks and Caicos. And so we were out there. We decided, you know, there's a big thing that, you know, to avoid hurricane season when you're out in the Caribbean. And really what you want to do is get down to the southern latitudes near Grenada to avoid those. And you have to do that by a certain time frame. And we've kind of started our trip a little bit late. So, you know, we were kind of hustling. And we decided to go from the Bahamas directly to the Virgin Islands, and that's typically a 7-8 day trip, you know, as long as you're starting up far enough north. But we didn't start far enough north, and you know, the weather wasn't really great for us, but we went for it anyway. And we were out in the middle of the ocean, in the middle of the Atlantic, for about 3 or 4 days, and eventually we ran into, you know, some very heavy winds and probably 20-25 foot seas. And it was very taking a toll on all of us. And, you know, when you're in the middle of the ocean, you can't just go and sleep and rest. You know, you have to take shifts, because you have to watch out for other ships coming at you and other, you know, maintain the boat and things like that. So, you know, it does take a big toll on the body, and especially when there's big weather like that. And so what we had to do is we decided to avert our plans and go straight south, and that we were about at the longitude of Turks and Caicos. Mm-hmm. And so we had headed south, right to South Caicos, and by the time we got there, it was pitch black dark, and we had to go through this very narrow channel with the big rocks on both sides, and we couldn't see any of it. We were just relying on our GPS and our charts and kind of just staring down and praying. And then eventually we got through that channel, and the everything calmed right down. We dropped the anchor and went to sleep.
This was after 4 days of sailing, and we were just, you know, kaput. You know, we were on our last bit of energy. So yeah.
So yeah, one thing. I'm sorry, Livy. I didn't mean to interrupt you. But I was going to ask Ryan. He mentioned something that I'm not a sailor, but I thought about this while preparing for this show. So when you're at the sea, you both don't go to sleep at the same time. You're saying you take shifts to watch out for boats and to make sure that you're safe?
That's right. We take 4-hour shifts. You know, we pick the shifts that we like best, but typically 4-hour shifts. So someone's always on watch, someone's always looking at the radar for other ships. You know, there's been many occasions where there's been, you know, a large cruise ship, or not a cruise ship, but a cargo ship, mm-hmm. where they weren't paying attention, and they wake up in the morning and they see a mast and sails on their bow. They didn't hear it, they didn't feel it, they didn't know that they ever hit anything, and by that time it's just far too late. So yeah, that does happen, and so you always have to keep a watchful eye.
But you know, we're talking about some scary experiences here, but you have the reward, though, is I'm sure incredibly great and worth the I guess the danger or the risk, right?
Definitely. You minimize the risk by, you know, being prudent and watching carefully. And And, you know, the thing about living on a sailboat is self-sufficiency. You know, you really have to have confidence in yourself to be able to, you know, manage and maintain situations as they arise, because nobody is there to help you. You can't just call the Coast Guard and they're going to come flying with their helicopter and rescue you. You have to be fully self-sufficient and be confident in your abilities. You know, you don't have to know everything, but you have to at least attempt everything and try everything and do your best at it.
So how many weeks are you guys gone at a time?
Well, when we, you know, sailing wise, you know, the longest sails we've ever done were about 5 to 6 days straight.
Okay.
But, you know, if you're sailing through the Caribbean, you can plan your routes accordingly. And really, if you do it the right way, you could probably get to all the way down to South America with your longest sail being 18 to 20 hours.
You guys have been to South America?
We got close. We got down to Grenada, Trinidad, Tobago, which is right off the coast of Venezuela.
Okay. That's awesome. Tell me, let's begin closing this up. Tell me some things you have learned by living on a sailboat. Livy, I'll let you go first.
Well, you know, one main thing we learned is what we're capable of as humans and our abilities to survive off of the natural earth and the ocean. And, you know, also, you know, what amazed us the most is the money we're saving now. You know, coming from $4,000 living on land to cutting that more down to more than half, you know, and living on the ocean on our sailboat. And it's really about comfort of living. To us, this is comfortable, and this is what we want and what we enjoy out of life is being with nature and surviving off of our own skills.
And the freedom, you know, it's true freedom. It's being able to move and go places, you know, and have everything you need right here in one place and not be stuck and tied down to any one place is true freedom.
And just the rewards. I mean, I know the few times that I've been to the area that you're in, you know, I didn't want to leave, just like you guys are talking about. You want to stay there forever, and that's kind of what you guys have done. You've said, hey, let's give that a shot. Let's sell everything, and sell everything, and then sail on the sea. Mm-hmm. It's just an amazing thing that you guys have done. Is there anything you miss, by the way, on land, that when you're at sea, is there anything that you guys talk about and think, man, I wish we had that, or I do miss that?
There is one thing, and us being, you know, outdoors type of people, from Colorado, we miss the mountains. We miss being able to get up into the mountains and camp and four wheel. You know, we've always said we'd love to have the best of both worlds, but you know, you have to sacrifice a little bit of something each and every way. There are places where you can have the best of both worlds, but not in America. You
know? That's right. That's right. Tell people about your website. I've been kind of hinting at it, but tell people about it and what they can learn about you guys on there.
Well, our website is pretty much basically how we're living and, you know, a bird's eye view on what we do and how we do it. And, you know, it's just fun pictures and good stories on there. And we'd hope that you guys come and stop by and leave us a comment and say hi.
Yeah, and they also have, I think you're on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. I can't remember all the social media that you're on, but did I get that right? Are you on Facebook also?
We're on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram.
YouTube, that's right, yeah. That's right. So, yeah, there's several ways to follow Ryan and Olivia. Guys.
Thank you so much. Also, Michael,
sure.
You know, one other thing I kind of just wanted to touch on specifically here. You know, seeing all the natural beauty and everything, you know, one thing we did discover was ocean pollution that really, I think, needs awareness. You know, there's a lot out there, and I think the more we can learn from it and, you know, really prevent ourselves from using single-use plastics is what I think can make a big change. What we see out there mostly are plastic bags and, you know, those plastic water bottles are practically everywhere consuming our oceans. And, you know, sea life is actually feeding off of this now. And the more we can stop ourselves from using plastics of this sort, the more we can start eliminating it in our oceans. So, you know, whenever possible, guys, when you're at the grocery store or, you know, any kind of stores, refuse those plastic water bottles and those plastic bags. Because these are the steps that can start healing our earth.
And I'm sure that when you guys are out there on the ocean, you see stuff floating around, don't you?
Oh, we're picking the stuff up all the time.
We've also helped sea life and turtles and remove plastic, right. You know, bags and bottles and pieces of plastic, you know, embedded in their skin and things like that. It's really detrimental. Not only that, but the sea life and the coral and the reefs. You know,
yeah.
That's what most people come to the ocean to see, is they go snorkeling and see the sea life, and you know, that's very, you know, endangered right now.
And it's really having an effect, for sure, that we can see.
Yeah, and, you know, sadly some people joke about that, but it's really not a joking matter when you see, you know, pollution in the ocean and just, you know, the impact that we're having on, you know, what I consider God's creation. It's really sad, you know, what you're talking about. But I appreciate I appreciate
you. And you really don't have to live by the ocean to make these changes. It really comes from all of us taking the steps together on land and everywhere we are to stop eliminating this in our oceans.
Yeah, amen to that. Thanks, Olivia, for bringing that up. And once again, guys, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Michael. Great talking to you.
Let me tell you about today's sponsor before we leave. Today's sponsor is MySolarBackup.com. Discover how you can get instant backup power even when your neighbor's electricity is out. It's like having a secret power plant hidden right in your home. Best of all, the electricity you get, it's free. That's MySolarBackup.com. As a reminder, you can visit offthegridnews.com for the best off-grid features and news you'll find anywhere. Our team of expert writers has written thousands of stories about every facet of off-grid living. That's offthegridnews.com. We're also on Facebook, Twitter, and Pinterest. Please join us again next week for another edition